Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Coming up
on the free-for-all, football columnist Kevin Clark. We're not afraid to ask him, is Peyton Manning through? Then, Patriots, undefeated or not, Jim Cherusmi gives his opinion. And Ronda Rousey, overrated, underrated, what's next for the UFC dethroned champ? Coming up on the hottest of the hot takes, WSJ Free for All.
You're listening to Free for All from the Wall Street Journal. Now, here's Jason Gay.
What happened to funny stories? The guy used to say funny stories. Jim, what happened to that?
Well, I guess we're not telling any funny stories.
Tanya, our great producer, Tanya. Tanya, what happened to funny stories?
Well, we do have that on retainer. We decided to mix it up a little bit. This was the straight, you know, raw version. And
you don't think I'm funny, do you, Tanya?
I think you're very funny, as a matter of fact. But I don't think we need to overstate that. I think you should.
A little funny goes a long way.
Yes.
Well, this is the free-for-all, episode five. Episode five was Empire Strikes Back. Isn't
correct.
That true? Episode five?
Well, if you count that way.
I do count that way. I count
the
properly.
The fifth Star Wars movie was, not Empire.
Well, in order of their making, it was not Empire. But in terms of the way the trilogy
correct.
Situation works, it is the fifth episode of Star Wars. Joining us live in studio today, he's a bit of a cult figure. Actually, he's not even a cult figure now. He's America's sweetheart. Mm. He's the extraordinary football columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Kevin Clark. Kevin.
Hi, Jason.
I'm glad you were able to join us. You do lots of other outside media obligations. I know you're a favorite guest over there on the Big Lead. And Schrager. Schrager likes having you on too, right?
I've been on both those things once each. So now you're tied.
Okay.
I didn't become an entity until like last year.
But everyone loves Kevin Clark.
Yeah.
Do you know this? Everyone loves Kevin.
In the
Clark.
Local news? I've seen Kevin on the local news.
Yeah. I thought it was your dad who saw it.
That's true.
I didn't even watch
what
it.
What local news were you on, Kevin?
I don't want to get too specific here. A network that I am on all the time, sort of nationally, emailed me and said, we'd love you to do this thing. And I showed up, and it was the local version of said thing.
Okay.
And I didn't even know. And then they were asking about the Jets and Giants over and over again.
Okay.
And I don't cover those teams, so
right.
I was making
caught flat-footed.
I was making it up as I went along. I was talking about. I mean, it was really. I was talking about Phil Simms being the quarterback of the Giants. It was awful. It was terrible. I wasn't actually doing that.
Well, listen. If you're making it up as you go along, you'll fit right in here on the free for all. And let's get right to it, Kevin. I want to ask you a couple things about the NFL. First of all, this whole, like, Peyton Manning is washed up. It's over.
Mm.
He's hurt. We know that. Brocky is coming in to pitch relief next week. He did it a little bit last Sunday against the Chiefs. Is Peyton over?
Yes. As a top-tier quarterback. I mean, he's had flashes of brilliance this
They're
year.
They're 7-2.
I know, but
they are
he has been
two.
A liability. The defense is returning interceptions for touchdowns. I mean, they are doing everything they can. It's like...
But is it also a game that he's not... I mean, on Sunday, he hurt them. But maybe part of the reason they were 7-2 was that he might not have been the electric quarterback he once was, but at least he wasn't negatively impacting them, and for what we see with quarterback play now in the NFL, just not negatively impacting your team might be sufficient to make your team 7-2.
I agree with that, but here's the thing about Peyton Manning. The Denver version of Peyton Manning has always been short passes, knowing where to go with the ball, beating one-on-one coverage as soon as he sees it, okay? He relied on throws of about 8 yards, and that's all he had to do. That's why after four neck surgeries and no feeling in his fingers, he could have been the MVP that he was and throw 7 touchdowns in a game and all that. He can no longer make those 8-yard throws. I mean, it's depressing and it's sad and, you know, age is undefeated and all that. But it's just when you're incapable of throwing short passes and you are no longer able to take advantage of the smarts that he has, it is over.
he's got what, plantar fasciitis?
Yeah, in his foot. But you know, he revealed over the summer he cannot feel his fingertips. That's not good.
Yeah.
He hasn't for a while. But if you can just sort of wing it with that sort of feeling in your hands, that's fine. But now it's catching up to him.
Jim, you know that song, I Can't Feel My Fingertips? You listen to it?
Well, that's the thing. Is this it? Like, you know, talking about music, is this the encore for Peyton Manning? Are we going to, you know, if I'm a Peyton Manning fan, and do I have to kind of basically, whatever I see of him, this is it? This is it.
And it's time to... To be honest with you, I've been working on a when Peyton retires story for like 3 years now, and because you just don't know when it's going to go. It goes really quickly. I think that that's the thing with this era where there's so many nutritionists and sports science and all that. When it goes, we can't tell because the decline is no longer gradual. You know, you don't see, okay, this guy goes from 30 touchdown passes to 20 to 10. It's more they go from 30 to 5 because when the wheels fall off, they fall off very
quickly. Let me remind you, Kevin Clark. Last year, maybe a little bit earlier in the season, there were epitaphs being written for another iconic NFL quarterback who had a bad game against the Kansas City Chiefs.
I remember.
Tom Brady.
I remember.
And there was actually conversation, real conversation, words that were emitted into the air that the Jimmy Garoppolo era might need to begin.
Belichick was asked about it. Will you be evaluating? Will you be evaluating?
And now we all know that Tom Brady is from outer space and is, you know, playing at a level at which he probably hasn't ever even played before.
Right.
Talking
about playing another 10 years, and people don't laugh out loud. Can we see that kind of reversal in Peyton Manning?
No. It's just four neck surgeries, all that. The offense around him is not built like Tom Brady's offense around him is built. He doesn't have a coach like Bill Belichick. He has a coach like Gary Kubiak.
Did they really bench him, or was it kind of like both sides acknowledged it wasn't working out and he was going to take a seat for the rest of the game?
No, I think they benched him. He didn't take his helmet off, Jason. Like, it was one of those weird...
Yeah, but he doesn't. He's one of those sit-on-the-bench-in-the-helmet guys.
Yeah, he's never on the bench, so he's uncomfortable. I don't think he knows where the bench is.
No, I've seen him on the bench, but with the helmet on. It's a very funny thing. That's a Peyton Manning
trademark. He's trying to let everybody know he's not happy about being sidelined.
Okay. I want to ask about the Giants-Patriots game.
Sure.
I know we're 2 days out, but it was, listen, and you do more of this than anybody, especially for today's column, we watch a lot of bad football. Mm. For all the love about the NFL, there's a lot of bad football out there. And that was not bad football. That was a wonderful game.
Beautiful game.
You had electric moments. You had a punt return, nearly returned for a touchdown, where a guy got tackled by his own teammate,
mm-hmm.
Danny Amendola.
I'm not sure if that's beautiful football.
You had an extraordinary touchdown from Odell Beckham Jr. You had great quarterback play. Eli played in the first half, probably the best first half mm-hmm. he's ever had in his career. Mm-hmm. Was the best first half he had in his career. Jim, you watched the game?
I did. And once again, we have the Giants forgetting how to kill the clock.
What is that?
Game management.
I mean, the Giants are such a forward-thinking organization. Why don't, after like the eighth time they screwed this up, why not have a guy in the booth like 12 other teams have who says, okay, take a timeout now? I mean, that's a standard thing around the league now.
The Giants should be a timeout guy, like a clock management person.
A person who is in charge of the whether or not you should throw the flag for the challenge, when to take a timeout.
Interesting.
Just a common sense czar.
I could do that job. Could you do that job, Jim?
It's mostly absolutely. Like MIT students.
I'd go for two every time.
There is a team, I don't want to say it, there's a team that has one of those guys who's literally a student at Harvard doing
it. It's sort of uncharacteristic. There's a lot of things you don't want to say, Kevin. I like this. You're
well, I don't know if it's public or anything, you know? I'll write it one day.
So does the guy in Harvard, we don't have to say the team, does he stand on the sideline and or is he like undercover? Is he in the booth?
No, he's a team employee. He sits in the coaching booth. That's why and I think part of it is that like, so the Niners, I think, were the first team to do this. And the coaches don't like it because they were all, you know, graduate assistants at Middle Tennessee State. And they did it. And all of a sudden there's a 28-year-old from
telling him when to call time.
Yeah, and they hate that. And they're sitting next to him, and they're wearing the same little vest, the little starter vest, and they hate that. They're like, well, what have you ever done, sort of thing.
Nevertheless, tough loss for the Giants, but not so tough that it doesn't make you think that they could be an interesting team in the playoffs. I cannot believe I'm saying this, but JPP is making a big difference.
He's back.
I mean, it's crazy. it's crazy. He's got that giant oven mitt on. He's you can't see this if you're watching the free-for-all at all, but Jim has the daily racing format and is making his box picks over there. Is that what you're doing?
No, I have the NFL standings in front of me.
Okay. All right.
Plus the point spreads.
But the Giants, they're kind of having one of those giant seasons, aren't they, where they sort of like stumble their way.
And they win the Super Bowl.
And they're going to get hot when they need to get hot.
The JPP
I wouldn't
want
to play him again if I was the Patriots.
The JPP thing is interesting to me. I think that if you ever just been completely embarrassed about something and that I think there's
describing my state of mind.
No,
what are you
I just mean
about?
Like if you when you make a mistake or you fall down in public or you just horrendously
again, a daily experience for
you're
me.
Just horrendously embarrassed, there's an adrenaline that takes over that's sort of like I have to find a way to get out of this. And I think JPP was so publicly embarrassed, and he when he came back
so he's motivated by
yes,
shame.
Yes when he came back.
Yeah,
I was there reporting the Odell Beckham column last 2 weeks ago. He was talking more about it than ever. He was like meeting one-on-one with reporters, describing his injuries, yeah. Sort of making up for lost time. And he's owning this. And I think that the shame is actually propelling him. I know it's an odd thing, but I think it's a powerful thing.
Let me ask you this, because you follow a lot of the physiology of the game and what these guys do in terms of getting themselves ready. Mm-hmm. In a lot of sports, guys who are injured and come in midseason, they'll say, like, I've been working out really hard on my own, super hard. But there's nothing like actual gameplay in terms of testing your physical limitations. And it's like it's that sort of breathing out of your eyelids exhaustion that it's impossible to replicate on your own. And that would be the thing that I would be looking at JPP. And I don't know how many plays and how many situations he's in. But he didn't look gassed at all. He was making big plays deep in the fourth quarter of that game.
He was also playing for a contract, by the way. So
this is also true.
So anything he was doing down in South Florida, I don't know if he's in Deerfield Beach or whatever, he's getting in shape because he's playing for his next team. Because I don't think the Giants are going to bring him back.
Why not?
Well, he was sort of not cooperative during this whole thing. He didn't let doctors see him.
Yeah, but if you're the Giants, you kind of look at it like, we are a little bit bad. I mean, they had the second worst defense in the league entering this weekend's game. I mean, and he's an absolute difference maker.
But here's the question. You know, Kevin, you were talking about running earlier, and say, you haven't run in a few months because, say, you had an injury or something.
Sure.
You still have built up the cardio to run a certain amount, right? But now... Going into next season, JPP has, what, three fingers? Is he going to be able to lift weights and continue having the strength in
right.
his arm?
I think that they'll be able to.
They'll figure
that out. The people like the trainers, the Exoses of the world over in Phoenix, they figure it out how to come up with a plan. I mean, maybe it's a weight where you can just use your palm or whatever it is. He'll be able to sort that out.
There's also like other ways to do resistance training that aren't, lifting, pushing
a car. You can just push a car.
Yeah, there's a million things. And I also would probably argue that strength training for his age and experience level, it's good, it's important, but it's not the be-all and end-all, which I think is probably endurance at his age and sort of keeping his weight down and that kind of thing. Kevin, I have a funny story to tell you.
Ooh. Funny stories.
Ooh.
Funny story sound. So the other day, Friday of last week, I am here at the News Corp headquarters where the Wall Street Journal is located, and I'm invited along with Wall Street Journal sports editor Sam Walker to come down to a little reception for Australian rules football.
Mm.
You might know that there are some Australians who work for this company, and they're very fond of Aussie rules football. And so this incredible team was here in the building because they're getting ready for a big match in Ireland, and they were coming back across America, and they were stopping in New York along the way. And I go in there with Sam Walker, and who is among, there were probably, 50 people in the room, 40 people in the room, and standing in the middle of the room having a conversation with a few of our associates, Roger Goodell.
Hey!
Commissioner of the NFL, who I had not met face-to-face before. I'd certainly seen him in person, giving many a press conference, including some high-profile ones last year. But I'd never actually had a one-on-one conversation with him before. And it was not, a sitting down for a grill him interview kind of circumstance. But it was interesting. We talked a little bit about L.A.
Sure.
and what's happening with football in L.A. And whether or not we're going to see multiple of teams there. What do you think about L.A.? Do you think you're going to see more than one within the near future?
Here's what I think. I think if it was easy to get a team to L.A., there would have been a team in L.A. already. It's been 20 years of stops and starts.
Right.
So I think that there will be one team. I think it'll be the Rams, because Kroenke's basically saying, I'm going and you can't stop me. And he has the cash, by the way, and he has the the land and the shovels in the ground. Okay, that's what he has. So,
shovels in the ground.
He bought out the old Hollywood Park, bringing it back to racing, and they're going to build a stadium on the old Hollywood Park.
They're going to let horses just run around the field, though. It'll be fine.
But I also talked to the commissioner about, we talked a little bit about the Yahoo game, which was obviously, we've talked about it here on the free-for-all, but it was the first ever internet service provider only game in NFL history, and what the reaction and quality of broadcast that was. We talked a little bit about NFL Network's relationship with CBS. Kevin, your name did not come up, is what I'm trying to say.
It's okay.
Was Roger on? Is he always on?
No.
He wasn't. He was not trying to entertain. I should mention that Sam was standing here as well, so you know I had to make sure that you know I kept it on the up and up in front of Sam. But he was not trying to entertain.
I've had, I think, four conversations similar to yours at owners' meetings, stuff like that, with Roger, and I find that unless he's in, you know, Ray Rice scandal mode or anything like that, where he thinks that the world's crashing down on him, he usually lets his guard down and is just sort of more casual than you.
But at the same time, I don't want to give the misimpression that all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, this guy is completely misunderstood. He's a completely different.
No.
I have no insight onto that whatsoever. But it was the first time that I met him face to face. I want to point out, though, he showed up on Sunday. Pat's Giants.
Mm-hmm.
He was there at the game.
Brought some fans.
Bon Jovi. Bon Jovi, can they just give him some part of some team?
I wanted to do a story on this. I think I may have written something about it. Every NFL owner loves Bon Jovi, just loves him, and thinks he's the most amazing person. He's been a guest at basically all 32 teams at this point. Jerry Jones, I believe, said he's one of the best people he's ever met.
But he's a little bit sort of like promiscuous with his attention. You know, don't you think that he's friends with Kraft, he's friends with the Maras, he's friends with...
Yeah, he's trying to get a team.
He's trying to get a team up.
It's like Les Moonves or something. Like,
Buffalo
it's his
did
job
not
to
want him because they thought he would schlep him to Toronto.
Which
is that
true.
Correct?
Well, no, he partnered with some people
he
who...
He partnered with a Toronto group.
Which is a red flag when you're trying to keep the team out of Toronto.
Right. I also have heard that he would very much like to do the Super Bowl halftime show, which would seem to be a crowd pleaser in the NFL offices, but
he probably felt very snubbed when he didn't get the New Jersey Super Bowl.
And they picked Bruno Mars.
I can't remember, dude. Was it Bruno Mars?
Bruno Mars plus Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, yeah. Last year was Katy Perry. So Bruno, that was a mistake. Look, Bruno Mars did a really good job, and I think he sort of surpassed the expectation.
But in New Jersey.
But, you know,
it's a Pepsi product. As our Hannah Karp has written many times, that whole thing is just a Pepsi viral marketing campaign at this point. The halftime show.
Right.
The NFL has less to do with it than you would think.
Though, according to Hannah, they also have inquired if people will pay to do the halftime show.
But
well.
Bon Jovi doesn't have enough money.
I mean, the artists will pay.
Slippery When Wet didn't give him that much money to buy an NFL team, right?
No, I mean, I think he plays stadiums and stuff. I mean, when you play... I don't want to know the numbers here, but like I've seen the hundreds of thousands of dollars you make per show when you play stadiums.
Bon Jovi is a wildly popular touring act still. I mean, they have a full reservoir of hits. They have a audience with disposable income that still buys records, unlike people under the age of 40. And so there is a real commercial potential for them still. Whether or not they're halftime material, I don't know. I want to ask you about some other stuff, Kev.
Sure.
NFL. I can't believe I'm bringing this up, but okay. Cam Newton, Panthers, 9-0.
Did you see the letter this morning?
So there's a letter. Let me make sure that I have this correct. It was a letter from a mother in Tennessee who is raising her child to be a Titans fan.
Nine-year-old daughter.
And was the kid at the game or just watching it on TV?
I don't know.
Unclear.
I don't know the answer.
Unclear.
To
but it was a letter to the Charlotte Observer expressing agita about Cam Newton's celebration during the Titans Panthers game.
The dab dance.
And the letter, Jim, you got to see this letter. It's like straight out of like 1955 when people were like all up in arms about rock and roll.
It is footloose. It is literally footloose.
It refers to quote unquote pelvic thrusts. Pelvic thrusts. this child.
Classic Elvis criticism.
Classic Elvis criticism is right. It's also, we've criticized Jim for public press on the free-for-all. Cam Newton, what I hate about this story is that all of a sudden you're trying to do this like cultural debate about Cam Newton. Can we just talk about how good Cam Newton has been and how the Panthers have been? I mean, Cam Newton is building a I don't think he's going to get it. I think Tom Brady's been better for sure. Mm-hmm. But Cam Newton is your MVP runner-up right now, is he not?
I would say so, yeah. I mean, I think he is incredible. I think that defense...
What happened? Why are they so... I mean, last year they snuck into the playoffs mm-hmm. with a backwards record, right? They were what? They were
8-8, I think.
They were 8-8, okay.
Maybe 7-8-1. Did they have a tie last year?
I think they might have had a backwards record, yeah. But regardless, they were not a primetime playoff team.
They were not. And they played one of the worst playoff games of all time against Arizona.
That's right.
With Ryan Lindley, of course.
That's right. But... Now, Riverboat Ron.
He's back.
9-0 in a subdued, you know, division for sure, but I don't know.
I think they're really, really good. I believe the Wall Street Journal prohibits us from discussing work trips. I believe that's somewhere in our thing. But if I were flying out today, I would be flying to Charlotte, North Carolina to do a Panther story. If hypothetically I was doing that, I would be. So they are, I think, the runaway favorites right now in the NFC because the Packers have become the Bears somehow, and Aaron Rodgers is temporarily morphed into Jay Cutler.
What's going on there?
I have no idea. I mean, the play calling is awful. Rodgers is not finding these guys open. I mean, Rodgers' skill, it's twofold. Number one is extending plays with his legs, but the other thing he's really good at is just throwing guys open, throwing to James Jones when he has an inch of separation, and by the end of the pass, James Jones is somehow 8 feet open in the end zone, okay? That's not happening. And I don't know what that is. Maybe it's the dog days. Maybe they rest on their laurels. They have a new play caller, Tom Clements, who was the offensive coordinator and then before that the quarterback coach. It defies explanation.
Seattle lost a close one to Arizona. Mm. On the same wavelength, I'm not yet willing to take Arizona all the way to Titletown. I'm also not totally willing to write Seattle completely off. They're worse off than they were. I mean, everyone says, oh, last year they were kind of screw loose and they got it together for a big Super Bowl run. This is not like that last year.
So I have a pet theory that I'm still developing, and I'm not ready to put it in the paper, that quarterbacks are getting way, way overvalued, okay, and that their mega contracts are hurting the team. And I think that the argument that Russell Wilson's contract is hurting the team or Bobby Wagner's contract is hurting the team gets dismissed a lot because when you call a GM or you call a coach and you run them by them, they go, well, I'm not crying any tears for a team with Russell Wilson, you know, that sort of thing, okay? And so...
Do they really say it with that accent, too, every time?
Yeah, they do. But you look at the depth that they had when they won the Super Bowl, okay? They had 8 defensive linemen that any team would have, you know, in their rotation, okay? You have amazing wide receivers. You have all these guys. And all of a sudden, you start paying Russell Wilson. You have to start cutting guys.
Yeah.
And the depth goes away. And then, you know, you say, why did they win the Super Bowl? Well, they won the Super Bowl because of Russell Wilson. No, they won the Super Bowl because they had amazing depth. And now they just have Russell Wilson.
You need great quarterback play to get to the Super Bowl these days. I think the days of, like, the Trent Dilfer is taking you.
Colin Kaepernick.
He had a great season. He is a real mystery to me. When I watched Colin Kaepernick that year when he took over for Alex Smith, I mean, he beat out a quarterback mid-season to take the job. And when I watched him, you know, make those incredible runs, including one in the Super Bowl, I was like, this guy's going to redefine the position. He's going to be complete.
But let me ask you a question. Did Colin Kaepernick lead them to the Super Bowl, or did Colin Kaepernick's salary lead to a team around him that got him to a Super Bowl? Mike Iupati is gone. I mean, people's this is, I know that it's really in the weeds to start talking about Mike Iupati's absence from the San Francisco 49ers, but once you start getting rid of guards, centers, all that, the team starts to erode. And I just look at the Patriots. Next year, Tom Brady is going to be, I think, the 16th highest paid quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah.
Because of all the mega contracts. Yeah. And so, in a couple weeks, this will probably be a column, but. And I'll have actual data instead of things I'm plucking out of thin air. But it's just the Patriots realized a long time ago that 53 players or 46 active players better than the other 46 players on the other side is the most important thing.
Your
median talent is important. That's why it's important to have a special teams player, Matthew Slater, making $1 million a year. Yeah. Nobody else wants that.
But
you
they
know?
Have the advantage of having a quarterback where, you know, Uggs could pay half his salary. Well, he could be the 16th.
But that's always been
–
I mean,
right?
Peyton Manning makes a ton of money.
Sure.
And he doesn't have to.
Sure.
John Elway – famously restructured his contract after selling his car dealership, okay? I mean, it's up to the individual person. Peyton Manning right now could go. Did you guys see the Michael Jordan lawsuit a couple of months ago?
Yes.
Where it came out that if he puts his name on something, he could just, what was it, like $6 million or something?
Yes, just to put his name on
something. Peyton Manning is in that stratosphere where if he says, you know what, I'm going to take a pay cut for $5 million a year. Oh, by the way, I have a new deal with Buick. And then, boom, you've made up your $5 million pay cut.
We're going to take a break here on the free-for-all, and we're going to come back. And, Kev, I want to ask you about the Patriots, but then we're going to talk about Ronda Rousey and what that upset means for sports. Coming back on the free-for-all.
Traveling on business? Then take us along and stay on track. WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously. Now, where sports meets life and everything in between. From the Wall Street Journal, this is Free For All with Jason Gay.
Now Tanya's just trolling me, Jim. She's like filling up these funny intros, and she's just taunting me with them.
I want to know how many they are.
20 yards for taunting, Tanya. Where'd you find that one?
Oh, I dug it up. It was a special treat for you.
Kev, Patriots. First of all, Gostkowski, I mean, the best.
If Gostkowski and Vinatieri were doing a Who Do Patriots Love More contest, who wins?
Well, I mean, you know, nothing like present company, so obviously Gostkowski wins. But it's just astonishing that the Patriots take possibly the greatest kicker of all time, dump him for possibly the greatest kicker of all time. It's such the classic Patriots move.
Yeah, and they've kept Gostkowski around.
Yeah, and Vinatieri has stuck around. Edelman?
He's out.
Big loss, or is it like you get somebody from the parking lot who about the same size and throw him the football in the slot?
No, I think that we've seen in the past 5 years there are seasons when Brady doesn't have any receivers and he can't create them. Yeah. I think that's Rodgers' talent that Brady – that maybe one talent Brady doesn't have is that when he has garbage receivers, he doesn't create superstars necessarily.
And Edelman put a lot of time in to get to what he became.
He
was a backbencher for a long time.
100%, yeah. And so, look, Amendola is healthy, so I think that's going to help. Remember, Edelman's entire success depended on Amendola getting hurt every year. Yeah. So that's a big plus. And plus, Brandon LaFell. I mean, Brandon, what was that, a 57-yard pass the other day? Yeah. Where it just sort of lofted into LaFell's arms. So, yeah, I mean.
Pats fans think he has the drops. He's a little bit. Though, LaFell, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I.
This guy Chambers, the other tight end, that's an interesting thing if they can get him going.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, Belichick, we don't talk enough about the Belichick's desire for a two tight end system because he tried that one time and one of the guys was a serial killer. And so we don't want to revisit that because then
I mean, not to glorify the serial killer, but that was a very potent combination. I mean, it was
Belichick. You know, one of the things I think Belichick is underrated for is his ability to look at the NFL and say, I'm going to disrupt this. I know it's very techie or whatever, but he looked at the NFL and everyone had a shutdown cornerback. There was Darrell Revis in the division at that point. And so he said, I'm going to create an offense where the shutdown cornerback means nothing. And he created two tight ends and he played up the middle of the field. I think that was absolutely brilliant.
So are we going to see 16-0, Kevin?
I don't think so. I don't think that Belichick, I mean, maybe just because Belichick's pissed off or whatever, but I think that there's too many potential losses on the schedule. Now,
yeah, I mean, you know, Washington played them well for most of that. I mean, you know, all right, let's look at the rest of the schedule here. Okay, they're home against the Bills on Monday night.
Rex Ryan.
So, yeah, more of that nonsense. I don't think Rex could beat them. Then they're at Denver. Peyton will not be back for that, unfortunately for the Patriots. The Eagles. The Texans, okay. I mean, they're still undefeated, right? The Titans.
Why can't the Eagles beat them?
Wait a second. I'm starting to think. Look at this. This is what they have.
Bills.
No, I know.
Broncos, home Eagles, away Texans, home Titans, away Jets, away Dolphins. You know, I bet they could lose that 16th game away at the Dolphins. That would be the classic move.
I would love that.
Sort of inspired, you know, 7-8
Dolphins team. Mercury and Morris on the sideline. You know, I mean, that's the classic.
I didn't even think of that.
My favorite thing about the Dolphins, the first team I ever covered was when I was a sophomore in college, the 07 Dolphins. And the Patriots,
when you were a sophomore, what was this, little big league? You were like in there with like a press hat, yeah. And you were like, it's 14 years old?
It's a long story. All right. Involves an internship that got extended. Alex Marvez, my guy, got hired right before the season. They needed somebody, so they oddly enough, asked me to do it. So
where you were like at press conferences like, this is Kevin Clark from the Kevin Clark Gazette.
Yeah, that was me. I worked for the South Florida Sun Sentinel at this point. It's great.
Shout out.
It's great. It's great paper. Okay, so the 07 Patriots came into town.
Yeah.
And the Dolphins brought out all the 72 guys because the 07 Dolphins were going to beat the Patriots that were, 12-0 at this point.
Right.
And the 07 Patriots embarrassed the Dolphins to the point that basically the 72 Dolphins all had to leave at halftime.
Do they buy the expensive champagne? Do they bring the super expensive champagne?
I've heard that's overstated. Bob Greasy and like somebody else, like Dick Anderson, live near each other in Coral Gables. And after one game, in the mid-90s or something, I think it may have been the Broncos when they lost to the Giants, when the Broncos were undefeated, they went across the street and just had a glass of champagne. And then that got repeated as if they all get together. I don't think that actually happens.
Okay, Stugatz. This is starting to sound like a Libertard show. Let's talk about Ronda. I want to wrap by talking about Ronda Rousey, who is a good friend of the free-for-all. I have met her before, interviewed her before, written about her before. Regarded by some, Sports Illustrated her on the cover as the most dominant athlete on the planet. Almost a sure thing. Her last three UFC title defenses, 34 seconds, 14 seconds, 16 seconds. Goes in the ring with another, I don't know if you want to say a no name, but not a big name in the UFC, an ex-boxer, kickboxer champion named Holly Holm, and wham! Ronda goes down. Thoroughly dominated by Holm. Holm just fought her brilliantly, basically created space between her, boxed her, hit her in the face, and then a sweeping leg kick in the second round. It was thorough domination. You know, I hate saying embarrassment to Rousey because, you know, this is what happens in fighting. Manny Pacquiao got knocked out cold. This is what happens. But a real turn of events for the UFC. Jim, I know you saw the highlights the next day, but, you know, I would characterize as a more casual follower of the UFC than, say, I am. Does this make you think, I don't have to pay attention to that anymore? Or does it perk your interest that there's now, to use Kevin's word, a disruptor in the UFC?
No, I'm certainly interested. As a boxing fan, I'm interested in these big events. I was interested in the Rousey fight. But it was sort of one of those syndromes where
you were asleep in your gym. In your gym jammies when this fight went. When you woke up in the morning, you found out what happened. What'd you think?
Right. Well, I thought, wow, that's interesting. I mean, you know, and then I immediately wanted to see the highlights of the fight.
Kevin, you didn't see it, did you?
I did not see it. I thought that.
And when you woke up in your jammies the next morning, were you shocked?
I was shocked. And what I was mostly shocked about, not shocked, shocked is the wrong word. I think what's good for the sport of UFC is that there was enough emphasis on Sunday on Holly Holm. You know, one of the things that I thought was funny was Quentin Glover, after the Lions safety. Not that we all don't know who Quentin Glover is. The Lions safety, after they beat the Packers, he stopped his press conference.
And said, I'm Holly Holm?
No, and said, shout out to Albuquerque, New Mexico. Huge win for Holly Holm.
That's funny.
So I think that it would be a great thing for that space to have maybe a rivalry. I don't know. I mean, it's good that there are two female fighters,
yes,
that everyone knows now.
Well, this is my question to you, which is that, so there are competing schools of thought here, as always, which is why we bring it up on podcast radio. One is that the thrill of Ronda Rousey and what made Ronda Rousey Ronda Rousey was this incredible domination, and that people wanted to see this almost like young Mike Tyson like person stalking the ring and knocking people out in the space of a minute. And that's what, you know, the last bunch of fights have been. Mm-hmm. And then there was another school of thought that thought Well, people are going to get bored of that really quickly, and unless the UFC finds a worthy competitor for her, a real nemesis antagonist, then the whole thing is going to start to fade. And sure enough, here comes this fighter who, you know, quite frankly, outclasses her and will be a heavy favorite if Rousey gets back in the ring in a rematch with her. How will you possibly favor Rousey in the circumstance? What's better? Is right. the latter a preferable business scenario, or was there a great deal of mystique that Rousey had because she was so dominant?
But there's also the safety net for Rousey of people are even saying, you know, should she even fight again? What, like, you know, there's other opportunities for her. Should she try to get back in the ring and perhaps, as you well, said, she's going to be the underdog again?
There's a lot of nonsense being talked about Ronda Rousey in the aftermath of this fight, and I want to address a couple of things here. One is that this notion of Ronda Rousey being somehow this, like, protected, coddled champion who never actually had a hardship in her life and, you know, was much more hyped than reality. I mean, you have to appreciate women's mixed martial arts fighting at the UFC level is to call it a nascent sport is a laugh because it was literally created about 26 months ago. I mean, this was when Ronda Rousey began training
2 years ago was laughed at
as a mixed martial artist fighter. The UFC said they would never allow women into the octagon. So she's basically gone out there and fought the competition that was available to her. Is there the kind of depth of competition that there is in the men's bracket? Absolutely not. But she's taking what's been given her. And this is somebody who, you know, she wasn't sort of like found in a casting call. She was a world-class, world champion level judoka who was an Olympic bronze medalist, somebody who was motivated to get into mixed martial arts partly on the basis of losing a gold medal at the 2008 Olympic Games in Beijing. There is more fighting in her blood. Her mother was a world champion judoka. There's more fighting in this person's blood than virtually anyone I've ever met. The suggestion that she's somehow, you know, some sort of media creation is spectacular nonsense, as is the idea that she's somehow been ducking this person or that person. I would challenge anybody who says that Ronda Rousey's ducking one person or the other person to name me who she in fact is ducking. I know that there's Cyborg, who's a competitor from Brazil, who a lot of people are interested in having her fight. I know the UFC is interested in having her fight down the road. That's probably all been changed now with this Heather Holmes upset. But, you know, Rousey, even if you feel the fights weren't the great athletic endeavors, for me, what made her fascinating and still makes her fascinating is sort of the economic aspect of who mm-hmm. she is. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could make a case that she was, up until Saturday at around midnight, one of the most important athletes in the world. For this reason alone, the UFC, if we're in agreement that it's a growth sport, it's a sport that sort of has mastered a younger demographic, a very desirable demographic that a lot of sports, baseball, would kill for, you would also know that they don't do anything that doesn't make business sense for them. And so the fact that in the space of 2 years, an athlete who competes in something they said they weren't even going to have,
right,
which was women's fighting, is now unquestionably the most famous person in the sport. And this is their words, not mine. Their words, Dana White's words. The most important fighter in UFC is Ronda Rousey. And is an economic, and this is the huge part, is an economic driver. She is headlining UFC events. They only do that because there's a there. There is not a compassionate reason for them to do it. There is no sort of like social reason for them to do it. They are doing it. It's all about the dollars. And the fact that she has become this economic force, that's amazing.
Yeah.
There's no analog for that in any other sport. So if she is able to stay in the sport, if she's able to like rise from this and show another side, and we've seen in fighting a million times, great fighters take a loss and go in one direction or the other, one direction into retirement and seclusion, or they become, you know, these vulnerable, more empathetic comeback characters. Who knows? The drama doesn't, it hasn't shrunk for me.
Well, it I agree. I mean, I just saw a stat, and I'm not even sure if we'll have to look into it, is that the winner, usually during rematches, the winner of the first fight usually wins the second fight more emphatically. So as you said, that, you know, Holm will be a heavy favorite to win. So we'll see. I mean, you know, it will be a great redemption story if Rousey comes back.
It will
and wins,
be.
Right?
And if anybody wants my layperson's analysis of what happened in that fight, you know, I think Rousey had become enamored with the idea of being a stand-up fighter. You know, she had always been a clincher. She's a judoka, of course. She's someone who is trained in the takedowns and submissions and the arm bars. That's how she began. But she had been knocking people out, and there was a real glee and excitement about that. And I think she might have become enamored of that. And the fact that Holm was a boxer, had this boxing and kickboxing background, I think even more excited her about that possibility. And she tried to beat Holm at her own game, and that was a mistake. She should have stuck to her tried and true. And so I think if Ronda goes back to old Ronda and does what she does best, it's a much more competitive fight. But if you watched it, if you watched the whole thing, Ronda tried to go toe-to-toe with her, and she got stung immediately. And that was the end. I mean, this fight was over early.
You know, I guess our colleague Jeff Foster made an insight. It made me chuckle. He said that he is just glad that Ronda Rousey is still going to do the remake of Roadhouse.
Yeah, obviously the studios don't have outs for contracts upon upset losses or something like that. I don't think anyone was anticipating this. Clearly, Ronda wasn't either.
Is she going to get replaced like Eric Stoltz in Back to the Future by Holly Holm? Just have a bunch of weird scene shots?
Well, you know, I will say, just to conclude here, you know, mixed martial arts is, again, it's a relatively young sport in terms of what the American fascination is with it, but it does rather well with Wall Street Journal readers. You know, I do hear from a number of Wall Street Journal readers when I write about it saying, like, what is this barbarism? I can't believe you're writing about this. What's going on in football or basketball or something like that? Yeah, or I love that. Like, what's going on with this barbarism? Why did you write about football? Yeah. But these stories, there is an audience for them. And journal readers do care. Ronda Rousey is a big story for journal readers, isn't it, Jim?
It is.
Yeah, she
certainly
is. Yeah, she gets a lot of attention.
I don't think there's enough mainstream coverage of that. So when there is that UFC people, I don't think there was nearly enough after Rousey's win enough columns about it.
Maybe that's it. Maybe I'm just a pioneer, Kevin.
I think you are. I think that there aren't a lot of people in your stratosphere who are looking at this very
seriously. The boring old guy, middle-aged columnist writing about UFC. Okay, I do what I can for the boring middle-aged. You're listening to the Free for All. Next week, more free, more all. Really appreciate you tuning in. Tanya, as always, thank you for your brilliant production. And Jim, Kevin, see you on the other side.
WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously.